Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather round the radio. It's time now for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. It's my privilege to serve as anchor of the program. It's an ensemble show, and it has some very interesting people involved, and I'm proud to be one of them. Carol Marx is the host and founder of the program. She's an extraordinary woman. She's one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and she is a champion in the battle against ageism. Let's kick the program off right now with Carol Marx in conversation with Richard Chu. He's a former neurophysiologist, EMT, and stress management consultant, and he's going to talk to Carol about his new book titled Living Well with Chronic Illness, A Practical and Spiritual Guide. It's published by Dog Ear Publishing.
Now, Richard, what inspired you to write the book?
Well, there were two events that happened. One was many years ago. Our first grandchild and his parents. His parents are, you know, my son and his daughter-in-law went out to California, and she was due, and she had her baby there, and they had not joined a parish yet, and the baby died at 4 months, and they had no support. And so I flew out there, and with the mother's pastor from Indiana, we did the funeral service together, and then the pastor had to fly home, and I wound up doing the interment service, the burial service by myself based on materials, facts from my parish to me. And when I got home, my pastor said, what you have done out there for your family is what deacons do, and I would like to sponsor you into the deacons program. That's how I became a ordained Catholic deacon. And I guess the second event is that I'm now into my 10th year as a caregiver for my wife, who has a progressive neurological disease. So I've been living with chronic illness and being a caregiver for 10 years every day. And I try to make sure that she has a good day, regardless of what the disease is doing. And so those are the two kind of events that have, you know, helped me. But part of it is that in writing the book, I have two perspectives. I'm a neurophysiologist. I taught medical school, teaching doctors and nursing students the functions of the body, the nervous system, and then I was an EMT for 12 years on the street. So I'm the first one with my crew to see a person who's called for an ambulance, whether it's medical or an injury. And so from 12 years on the street, and then being in the hospital as a pastor, you know, as a chaplain, I understand the patient's perspective as well as the doctor's perspective. And that's what I do sometimes, is bridge those two perspectives.
And that's so important. And, you know, some of the problems, I think, living with a chronic problem when a person gets first diagnosed is the fact that we as Americans depend so much on all our modern medical technology to heal us. And when that doesn't work, we experience depression and disappointment, and you call that medical baggage.
Yes, I do. I call it negative mental baggage, because when anyone receives a diagnosis of a chronic illness, something that can be with you for the rest of your life, it comes with a bag of what I call negative emotions, fear, guilt, anger, despair, and together they can cause depression. And cause a person to constantly look back and say, oh, I'm not what I was. And the job the book is trying to do, because I can only reach a few hundred people a year personally, but to reach out to the millions of people who have chronic illness to say, okay, let's deal with those. Let's get rid of them so you can turn around and stop looking backwards at what your life was and looking forward to what you can do, because everyone has more potential than what we actually use.
And in your book, you give some wonderful examples of people that have done just that, patients actually with terminal conditions, and one of them was Mark O'Brien. He's an example of a human being whose mind was greater than his body. What was the overwhelming challenge he faced, and what was he able to accomplish? Because I was really moved by his story.
You know, he was one of the very last people in the United States as a child to have polio and before the vaccine. And so he was the last, one of the last few people put in those, one of those terrible chambers, you know, that breathed for them. So he was captured into this machine, and he was kept there, and this machine would breathe for him, and he couldn't do anything. And he wanted to be a normal human being. and he loved reading. And so back in the days he did, he typed on a keyboard with a stick held in his mouth, a letter at a time, and then went on to be accepted to college at the University of California. And they would wheel this 500-pound piece of apparatus with him trapped inside down the streets and in the class, back and forth, and he had a tremendous support system. And he was able to graduate and get his degree in journalism and go on to become a working journalist. His story is the story of an ordinary person who just said, I'm going to be as much as I can, regardless of my situation. I think his story is just phenomenal. And there's a film that was done about him called Breathing Lessons.
And that iron machine also was so noisy. So he's an example of seeing your chronic illness, your difficulties, not as a barrier, but as an opportunity. That's a wonderful way of looking at things.
Yeah, I think that I'm trying to reach out to people and say, turn around from what is in the past and look forward. But what they have to do first is what you talk about. You have to be your own patient advocate. You have to want to say, I want to get better. There must be something better than what I have now. And when you say that, all of a sudden people pop out of the walls who are willing to help you, because it's that change in attitude. Because your audience are doers. You know, 50 years ago, grandpa and grandma sat there in a rocker and they just kind of waited. They just sat there. Your audience are doers. They're out doing, they're climbing mountains, they're doing all kind of fantastic things. And chronic illness, they will see, is another of life's challenges that they can conquer, that they can deal with. And that's what I'm trying to say in the book to them.
And as you just said, you really have to have the right attitude. And one of the things that's really great about your book is that you have some self-help worksheets that people can fill out in your book that can help you accept some of the changes that have happened. So can you tell us a little bit about your worksheets?
Yeah, the worksheets, I realize that everyone learns in different ways. And, you know, when we go see the doctor, they speak in jargon. And all the healthcare people, the therapists, because it's expedient, it's fast, and they can communicate quickly. But for us average people, you know, what did he say? What did she say I was supposed to do? And so I realize that what we have to do is make it possible for people to sit there and read and say, oh, I'd like to try that. Well, how do I do that? How do I tell my life story? And telling one's life story is probably one of the most important and yet easy things to do. Because when you do that, it opens up again things you thought about that you may have put away. You know, maybe you wanted to be an XYZ. You want to be a pilot. But that wasn't practical. Your parents said, you have to get a job. You have to do something practical. And you put away these dreams and thoughts. And when you tell your life stories, it opens up again things and brings you back to a point when you were still able to look at all of life and say, oh, that would be fun, and brings you forward again to saying, I can do more things despite my chronic illness.
Now, you work in hospitals, and when it comes to accepting the changes in life that can happen as a chronic illness progresses, how have you seen that faith, religion, and spirituality can really be helpful?
Well, in the most dramatic sense, this is not the normal situation. I'll get back to this, but I just want to mention to you what I saw during Hurricane Sandy in New York City. There are three hospitals along the East River, for those who are not familiar with the New York geography, and they're very close to the river, and the East River rose up and flooded the basements, all three of them, NYU, the Veterans Administration, and Bellevue. Now, Bellevue is the flagship of the New York City public hospital system, 845 beds. 5 emergency rooms, an acre of ICUs, a prison, a hospice. And on the hurricane, they had to evacuate 300 patients with no power. They were carrying patients down by stretcher from the top floors. The National Guard were passing medicines up, from soldier to soldier to get things up.
Wow.
So I came in, and I went up to the hospice, because that's where our most fragile patients were. And I had to use a flashlight to get up to the unit. And when I got in there, what I did was I had 24 patients, and during my 8 hours I was there doing constant counseling. 3 of them died, and I did prayer services. What I learned from my patients, that I worked with the entire unit, those with a faith, with a spirituality, whether it was religious or not, they had something to hold on to that gave them a strength and persistence that gave him the ability to endure these environments in which there was no heat, there's no electricity, there's no water for the toilet. In spite of that, what their inner strength gave them was the ability to persist. And in fact, some of those people would say, oh, don't help me, go help that person over there. And that's where that spirituality comes in.
Very inspiring.
And yeah, I learn so much from my patients. It's not me, it's they who teach me. And I try to share those stories with other people. So under those conditions, you really found out whether someone had a feeling of spirituality, reason for going on. And when they had it, they put it into practice. And that was wonderful. It's just wonderful to see what they did.
That's Richard Chu in conversation with Carol Marks. His book is titled Living Well with Chronic Illness, a Practical and Spiritual Guide, published by Dog Ear Publishing. For more information, go to chronicLivingWell.com. That's chronicLivingWell.com. Carol Marks returns with another interesting conversation. She's going to talk to one of the world's most powerful women. When A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you are the picture of health? You look healthy and you feel fine. But that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Doesn't always cause symptoms, but it can be prevented. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
Continuing now with A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair. And here now is the host of the program again, Carol Marks, in conversation now with Shari Arison. She was recently ranked in Forbes magazine as one of the world's most powerful women back in 2011 and 2012. And she's going to talk to Carol about her new book titled, Activate Your Goodness, Transforming the World Through Doing Good. It's published by Hay House.
Why did you want to write Activate Your Goodness, Transforming the World Through Doing Good, and who is it dedicated to?
Well, it's really dedicated to every individual who goes out and does good deeds for the benefit of others. And the reason why I wanted to write the book is I've always tried to create change in everything that I do. I do this through business and philanthropy, and the book is really just another platform to get the message out and inspire people to start thinking good, speaking good, and doing good.
Now, a lot of people feel that most humans are selfish, immersed in their own agenda. So can you tell us about the survey that was recently done that refutes these claims?
Yes, we found that most Americans are good doers, and it's amazing because we did do a survey, and it shows that Americans are good doers, and also that most Americans believe that one day out of the year can really make a difference to society. And we, as you know, we have Good Deeds Day. It's every year in March, and people believe that it can really make a difference. And we've seen that it has made a difference, which is amazing.
And how many countries take part in Good Deeds? When was the year that it got started? And haven't Americans participated in Good Deeds Day this year for the first time?
Well, Good Deeds Day started 7 years ago from the simple idea that everyone can do a good deed. I mean, there are people who volunteer and people who donate, but the idea of Good Deeds Day is that everyone can do a good deed and that it's simple. Even a smile that brightens someone else's day is a good deed. Going out and picking up a piece of trash and throwing it in the bin, or taking your grandma to lunch. It's very, very simple. So people have connected, gotten inspired. It started in Israel, and it started from very small, 7,000 people the first year. And 7 years later, this year, we had 370,000 Israelis, which is a huge number in Israel, 5,200 projects in one day, which is amazing. People going and cleaning beaches and planting gardens, activities for children and the elderly, and I could go on and on. And this has spun out to 50 different countries around the world. We have countries like New Zealand and South Africa and Chile and Canada and Ukraine and really all over the world. And this year, in March, March 10th, in Good Deeds Day, 20 states in the United States took part, thousands of people, many different organizations like Jumpstart and Generation On, and many different organizations took place. We had a kickoff in Times Square, and it's been quite amazing.
Wow. Now, when it comes to learning good, what makes you say that we have to learn to love ourselves first and forgive ourselves for being imperfect before we can get started doing good?
Well, I write about this in the book. I think it's really important to do good for yourself, care for yourself, get to know yourself, love yourself before doing good to others, because I think most people who do good for others in the end get depleted if they don't really think about themselves and care for themselves. And I give practical solutions for this in the book, how we can take care of ourselves, get to know ourselves, and then we just have much more to give to others.
The book gives some wonderful personal stories of people around the world who have made a difference in doing good. So can you tell us about one of them, the story of Dr. Bloom, his daughter Maya, and the Recovery Bears Project? It's so heartwarming.
Oh, it's a great story. It's about a doctor who found that, you know, as much as he helped people with whatever they needed to get well, that the recuperation took a really long time. And his daughter, who was at the time 16 years old, came up with the idea of giving, you know, good energy to teddy bears and passing those teddy bears on to the patients. And what they found was that the patients that got the teddy bears recuperated much quicker, didn't need as much medication, and they really found that it worked. So people started donating bears. They meditated and transferred positive energy to the bears and gave the bears to patients. And they found that it really worked. So that's a cute story. And there's many other stories in the book, personal stories of mine and other stories from people around the world, from simple ideas that made a difference.
Now, here's a vitally important question. Sherry, how can we inspire others to do good deeds all year long, not just on our very special Good Deeds Day?
Well, it's funny. Good Deeds Day really is a very practical example of how people can do good all year round, and we found that people who take part in Good Deeds Day, they end up volunteering all year round. And we've seen this. This is actually happening where people, it doesn't just start and end in one day. People who participate end up doing good all year round. So, you know, it works.
Now, I also would be very remiss if I didn't mention the Good Works and Green Initiatives that your businesses do, because you have a volunteer side, a philanthropic side, and a business side to what you do. So I can't mention
right.
all of them, but I wonder if you could comment on the work of the development arm of your company. Can you tell us about, because I was so impressed, the largest desalination plant in the world, which helps with water, and also your company has built and helped this Luxembourg-based company that has a very unique way of saving water. So can you tell us what that's all about?
That's right. Well, first of all, I think that, like I say in the book, you can do good in anything that you do. I do it through business and philanthropy. You can do it in any field that you're in. In business, what I found is that if you look at what the business has and see how you can bring added value to people, society, and the planet, you really make a difference. So, for instance, our real estate and infrastructure company builds 100% sustainable. So whether it's, you know, roads or highways or, like you said, desalination plants to bring water, we build 100% sustainable. And I started a company by the name of MIA. That's the company you were talking about from Luxembourg. And it's a company that actually looks at bringing an abundant amount of water to the world. And we do this by reducing water loss. Most countries and cities around the world lose anywhere from 30 to almost 70% of their water just underground. This is good water, water that's been paid for, that's being lost. And by reducing that loss, we actually bring more water to people. So, for instance, in Manila, in the Philippines, in a project that we started, within 2 years, we bring 3 million people water that did not have water before. And we work all around the world. So it's you can really do good in anything if you just put your mind to it.
Well, you know, your ideas with water are wonderful and unique, and I just hope that they spread around the world. Now, what has doing good deeds done for you?
Well, it's made a big difference in my life because, you know, I noticed that, I mean, I've always tried to create change, like I said, but I started noticing that, you know, doing good and wanting to make a difference in the world really starts with ourselves, with the way we think, with the way we speak, with the way we act, what we do. And I started really putting a focus on my thoughts, on my words, on my actions. And it's really transformed my life. I see, you know, in all of my relationships, both at home and at the workplace or anyone I come in contact with, it makes a difference. You have more positive communication, you know, a nicer environment, and things change automatically when you think that way. And so that's why I wanted to share it with the rest of the world and wrote the book.
That's Shari Arison. In conversation with Carol Marks, her book is titled Activate Your Goodness, Transforming the World Through Doing Good, published by Hay House. For more information, go to the website shariarison.com. That's shariarison.com. We'll come back with a look at the media with Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine, and then Steve Wiseman joins us with some interesting information and conversations. When A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security websites. Pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving, according to the U.S. Department of Energy. Speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation's struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and this is the point in the program that we talk a little bit about behind the scenes in the media, particularly talk media, talk radio. You're a talk radio listener. You're listening to us right now. And I find that people that listen to talk radio are interested in it. Kevin Casey, who is our senior correspondent, is the executive editor. He is the vice president, executive editor of Talkers Magazine, the trade publication in the talk radio business. And oftentimes we talk about subjects that are being discussed on talk radio of interest to our Touch of Gray upper demographic constituency. Kevin, the death of Margaret Thatcher certainly rocked the sensibilities of the world in terms of being a milestone in the passing of a great senior, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. Any time a world leader of her renown and, her importance of what she had to deliver during her 11 years as prime minister, huge important news story.
The initial reports, and you and I are conducting this conversation earlier in the week, the program's playing over the weekend, but as of today, the reports are that she died due to a stroke, but then some say that perhaps her dementia was related to it.
Her dementia certainly was high profile due to the movie that came out last year, The Iron Lady, in which Meryl Streep won an Academy Award for her portrayal of Margaret Thatcher. I watched the movie several times on cable. I found it compelling. I found Meryl Streep's depiction of Margaret Thatcher nothing short of awesome. But there will be discussions about the relationship between stroke, dementia, Alzheimer's, life and death, I imagine, for a while, as a result of the mixed signals we're getting in terms of what caused her to die.
Yeah, there will be. And, you know, interestingly, I know just a tiny bit about this due to my own particular family issues. And researchers are continuing to believe that they can draw links between dementia and strokes, and actually vice versa. So the two are believed to be connected in some way, at least as far as what we know at this point.
One of the things that we, as people, as humans, have difficulty grasping is the nature of the brain.
Mm.
That the human brain is both the seat of consciousness and emotions and psychological well-being or psychological ill. It also is a physical organ.
Yeah.
And, you know, we tend to, when we view the brain, it's actually the brain viewing the brain. We are, to a certain extent, unless you take it off in different philosophical and spiritual tangents, we are, as far as we understand, basically living in our brains.
Very true, as you pointed out. After all, the liver does not analyze the liver, but the brain does analyze the brain.
Yeah,
That's very true.
I mean,
it's funny because it's the one organ that we almost, you know, we are not that surprised when our kidney gets ill or our liver gets ill or our heart gets sick, but everyone thinks that we don't think about the brain as an organ that can get sick just like any other part of our body.
Right, and you know, we tend to tie our consciousness to our souls or to some metaphysical presence, but the fact of the matter is a blow to the head can definitely confuse you. A stroke has been described as a heart attack of the head, of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, basically what happens in the heart during a heart attack is what happens in the brain during a stroke.
Sure.
And yet stroke is so misunderstood, and heart attack is something that people are much more familiar with. So there is a lot to be learned from science and from medicine about the central role the brain plays on about every level in our lives.
No, absolutely true, Michael. And you know, it's one of the parts of the body that we're still learning. We have a lot to learn about it. And as you said, you know, it's the seat of our consciousness, and therefore it plays even more special role, I guess, than maybe some of the other organs in our body.
No question. Thank you for joining us, and certainly want to remind our listeners, if you're interested in what's happening in the world of talk radio, go to talkers.com, right there on the World Wide Web. Kevin Casey is a senior correspondent of this program, and he is also the vice president and executive editor of Talkers Magazine. Thank you, Kevin Casey. I'm Michael Harrison. A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues with our senior correspondent Steve Wiseman right here on this great talk radio station in just a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security webpages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, Screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly. That's socialsecurity.gov/MedicareOnly.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here is our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman, in conversation with Bruce Feiler. Bruce Feiler is a journalist and a New York Times columnist and is the author of Abraham and Walking the Bible, which became a PBS special. He's going to talk to Steve about his latest book titled The Secrets of Happy Families, Improve Your Mornings, Rethink Family Dinner, Fight Smarter, Go Out and Play, and much more. It's published by William Morrow.
Bruce, you quote Tolstoy right in the beginning. Tolstoy said all happy families are alike. Do you think so? What are the common ingredients of happy families?
Well, when I first encountered that line when I was a teenager, all happy families are alike, each unhappy family is unhappy in its own way, I thought it was idiotic. Of course, happy families are alike, right? There's big ones, there's small ones, there's loud ones, there's quiet ones. But I have to say I've changed my mind because we know more. Even in the last 5-10 years, there's been amazing research about what makes groups and teams work effectively. We've rethought dinner, discipline, difficult conversations. And I do think there are certain things in common. And as you know, I sort of outline them in the book. These are not things that everybody must do to have a happy family, but these are things that families do in common. And I think the three big themes are they adapt all the time, they talk a lot, and they go out and play.
You know, I love your emphasis on playfulness throughout there, and the fact that we got to get serious about this because it really is important, and it makes us feel good too, and it brings us together, right?
The research shows that families should spend less time worrying about what they do wrong and more time focusing on what they do right. It seems simple, but in fact, it's quite hard. All families have conflict. As you know, I have actually probably 3 chapters in this book about how to fight smarter, how to have difficult conversations, particularly about aging parents and dealing with issues of extended families when they're adults. There's lots of knowledge about this, including amazing new thinking about where to sit and how to stand and what rooms and what times of day to have difficult conversations. But there's also we can do things to play more and play better and play smarter. And I went to see the folks at Zynga about coming up with new games for families. I went to talk to the Green Berets because, after all, who is better at bringing different people together than the military? In fact, they've studied it for 50 years. And they have a lot of ideas about how to build up bonding. And the idea is if you have positive experiences, reunions or vacations or even walks in the park, you will deepen that bond so that when you get to the conflict part of being a family, which will happen a lot, you'll have the connection and the confidence to push through.
Well, you know, it's interesting you mentioned the family reunions and the family vacation, because I got to admit that was the first I jumped to that first before I even started at the beginning. Our family has big, major family reunions every year and plan vacations, and they're pretty good, but there are certain repeated patterns that bring about stress. And I'm looking at this going, the Green Beret Guide to Perfect Family Vacation. And the more I read, I'm going, wow, that makes sense. That makes sense. We can do that. Certain kinds of lists, certain kinds of activities. That one really rang with me. Now, have you put some of that into your own family and your vacations?
Absolutely. We have both my family and my wife's family, which have very different dynamics. We meet for these extended reunions, and the different generations would retreat into separate corners. The different families would, oh, that one likes to sleep late, that one likes to go to bed early, whatever it might be. And there are simple things you can do. For example, dividing up into teams, getting different generations, grandparents, parents, children, together working. And then suddenly grandma telling a story to the grandchild about the old days, aunts and uncles from different families who may not work together, may have some tension, they're writing a cheer. Suddenly, in our family we do a play, in my wife's family it's sort of outdoor backyard games. The activities don't matter. It's actually, it's the cooperation that makes different connections. So that when you're in saying, who's going to take out the trash tonight and who's going to do the dishes, you have that connection.
And let me also add that this book is, it's not just a sort of a how-to for Secrets of Happy Families. It's a very funny read. Yeah, it is an enjoyable, enjoyable book. Now, speaking of enjoyable, hopefully this is a good link. You have Secrets to a Happy Marriage in there as part of the family. And a happy marriage is a cornerstone in a happy family, isn't it?
Well, it can be. Obviously, there are single-parent families that can be very
sure.
High-functioning. But, yes, the core relationship can be key. And a lot of what we've been told there is also stale, speaking of the family experts giving us the same old advice. Date night, for example. If you just go to a dinner and a movie, it's not going to have much impact, actually. The research shows if you do something new, if you get lost or drive to a new part of town, cook a new recipe, take a class, you will actually rekindle those chemicals of when you're first meeting, and it will help to rejuvenate. Same thing with double dating. This is another idea that we've used after working on this book. We have a couple, we actually don't even talk about their kids. We get together, the four of us, and have a conversation that's just like we're all getting to know one another, very renewing. The truth is actually too much intimacy is actually bad for a long-term relationship. You need a little bit of mystery and newness. That's actually the way to spark, to keep your relationship fresh.
You know, and every time I would read some chapter, I would say, wow, yeah, that's right, that's right, that's right. Why did I not think of that? Now, what about arguing? Arguments will happen, and it cracked me up that just as you went to Warren Buffett for how to set an allowance, you went to the Harvard Negotiation Project for how to argue. What's the best way to argue?
Well, my wife and I were having this 7:42 fight. We would put our girls down when they were younger. We'd get together. We'd say, who's dropping off the dry cleaning? Who's picking up the milk? And suddenly we would be at each other's throats. So I said, there must be a better way. So I went to these guys at the Harvard Negotiation Project. They deal with Israeli-Palestinian peace problems, with nuclear arms treaties, and you guys must have some tips. Turns out
they don't know my
way. Actually very, very effective. And so we've made a lot of changes. First of all, research shows that the highest tension time in families is between 6 and 8. So 7:42, the worst time to have a fight. So we've changed when we have this conversation. We've changed where. We were doing it in my office. I was at my desk. It's hard. I've got computer equipment, lots of things that were making my wife, who was sitting lower in another chair. Turns out I was in the power position. She was arms crossed, resentful, negative energy right from the beginning. So we moved, and we no longer sit across from each other. You're more likely to be confrontational. And if we're having a really difficult talk, we've actually moved to this window bench in my bedroom, in our bedroom, because we sit next to each other. And research shows sit next to someone, you'll be more collaborative. So look, here's the larger point. There are all these ideas out there about fighting, about game playing, about having adaptability, about what to talk about when you're in the dinner or in the car. It's just cut off from the parents who need it most.
Yeah.
My thinking was, let's get flood this into families. I want to put lots of new ideas out here and, yeah, tell a few funny stories and some research. And I'm not wagging my finger saying these are the three things you got to do. I'm saying here's a lot of new ideas, but if you pick three, you'll have a happier family in a week.
That's Bruce Feiler in conversation with our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman. The book that he has written that they discussed has a long title. Here it is, The Secrets of Happy Families. Improve your mornings, rethink family dinner, fight smarter, go out and play, and much more. Published by William Morrow. Steve Wiseman will return for another segment to talk about financial abuse of elderly people, an important topic. That's next right here on A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups continues.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation's struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you're the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
For almost every American worker, Social Security is part of the plan for a secure retirement. It's important to know how the program works. If you have questions, the answers are easy to find when you visit www.socialsecurity.gov. Use the retirement estimator to get a benefit estimate. Browse our frequently asked questions. You can even apply for benefits online. Visit www.socialsecurity.gov to figure out your retirement plan. That's www.socialsecurity.gov.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, as we come to the final segment of this hour of our broadcast, and we're joined by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman, Stephen J.J. Wiseman, Esquire. He is a prolific author. He is an attorney, and he is an expert on many of the topics we discuss on this program. He's also an expert on scams and fraud. He's written the Bible of that discussion, The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall. He has a website that's very helpful indeed. It's called Scamicide.com. Here's Steve now to talk about financial abuse of elderly people. Steve?
Thank you, Michael. You know, there was a New York appellate court decision that brought once again to our attention the abuse of seniors financially. And this case dealt with a 2009 conviction that was upheld, and it was against Anthony Marshall, who was convicted of defrauding his mother, the late socialite and New York philanthropist Brooke Astor. But it has brought attention to the growing nationwide financial elder abuse. And one of the things that we need to recognize is much of this elder abuse is not by your typical scammer or identity thief who is just out there and no relation and no relationship with the person whom they are scamming. Now, granted, there are still plenty of those, and seniors are very much targeted for scams and identity theft by unrelated scammers. However, the great number and the great amount of this that goes on is people who are caretakers for these seniors or, unfortunately, even relatives. So there are a few things to look out for. One is, let's say an elderly relative of yours has a new best friend, and they're starting to become socially isolated just being with that best friend. Be very, very careful about that. The other thing is you want to watch the finances of your senior relatives. And the thing is that you probably want to have two people doing it, because unfortunately the situation has been that there have been people taking advantage of seniors when it comes to their finances. So in that situation, have two relatives working with the senior. Be conscious of the senior's sensitivity and sensibilities, you know, so that you're not necessarily taking over, but just working with them. But that way you can monitor bank accounts, you can monitor investments. You want to be looking also for things like, are there unpaid bills? Is there missing property, personal property, jewelry? Are there large or unexplained withdrawals from bank accounts or transfers? Are there changes in banks or attorneys? Are there new people turning up on bank account cards? Also look at bank statements for canceled checks that may not necessarily be coming to the person's home anymore. Someone may have actually changed the address on that. If you see an unfamiliar signature on checks or other documents, or a change in the spending patterns. All of these things are indications that financial abuse is going on. And remember, of course, unfortunately, it's the kind of thing where, yes, we do have to look out and make and help our seniors be protected from the outside scammers, but unfortunately, scams begin at home, too, so you've got to be careful with family members and caregivers. But that being said, you pay a little attention to this, you work with the seniors in the family, and things can work out all right.
Thank you, Steve. The financial abuse of elderly people, terrible problem, and you give some good advice. Steve has written The Truth About Avoiding Scams, published by Prentice Hall. Steve Wiseman, a regular senior correspondent here on A Touch of Gray. Thank you very much, Steve. Thank you very much, Beverly Santinello, our producer. Thank you, Carol Marks, the host and founder of the program. Thank you, Kevin Casey. The entire Touch of Gray broadcast family, I'm Michael Harrison, invites you to join us next weekend right here for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.